Right now, well, to me, if we're talking helmets, logos, Hamilton Tiger Cats, CFL, bar none, the best, in my opinion. And they might be the best team in the league. Andrew Buchholz from the 55-yard line joins us. Andrew, how you doing?
Pretty good. I just have to say I appreciate the love for the Hartford Whalers logo. They've always been one of my favorite teams, so it's good to see that gain some shout-outs. And while you're on the CFL front and talking about defunct teams, I really think some of the CFL USA logos deserve mention. The Sacramento Gold Miners was amazing. Mm-hmm. I loved the triangle of the Shreveport Pirates, the teal Barracuda of the Birmingham Barracudas. That was some classic logo design, even if those teams only lasted a couple of years.
Yeah, I remember the Memphis Mad Dog one, too. I love
that.
Oh,
yeah.
Somebody should start. The CFL should probably, you know what? Everything's so retro now. They should just bring out a line of those. I bet you they would sell.
Oh, absolutely. There should be more CFL USA merchandise out there. I think there would definitely be people who would buy it.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you brought out the Stallions again, people in Baltimore, I think, would go crazy over it. There's still a lot of loyal fans who show up at Grey Cup every year from that, so, which is smart. They're good partiers. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers are hosting the Grey Cup. With Drew Willey out 5 to 6 weeks, even if he was healthy, I don't think they were going to make it in anyway. Do you think they're a playoff team without Drew Willey?
I think it really depends on what level of quarterback play they get. I mean, if you look at their backups so far, they haven't really produced much of anything in the CFL with Brian Brome and Robert Marvey. And both of them were great college players. Brome got drafted very high in the NFL, but none of them, they haven't really done much in CFL yet, and in the opportunities they have had, they've been very disappointing. The thing that particularly bothers me is completion percentage, which is usually a good indication of how well quarterbacks adjust to this game, and both of those guys have just been terrible in that regard. So obviously there's more to the Blue Bombers' struggles than just the quarterback play. They weren't doing all that well even with Willey, but I think the quarterback play, based on what we've seen so far from these backups, I think it's going to drop with him out, and I think that'll make things even harder for them.
Speaking of quarterback play, Trevor Harris right now leading the league in passing yards. He leads the league in touchdowns. He's got the best quarterback rating. You know what? He's been the best quarterback thus far in the CFL. And Ricky Ray likely not coming back maybe till Labor Day. You think Ray comes in and is the automatic starter?
I think that's going to be fascinating to watch. I think in some respects, I think that Toronto wants to go back to Ray. Ricky Ray has played at such a high level over the last few years. He's such a perfect fit, really, for what Scott Milanovic wants to do. And I think the veteran experience is helpful. But it is always difficult to go away from a guy who's playing as well as Harris is. As you said, he may be the best quarterback in the league right now. He certainly put up some of the best stats. So I think really what we're going to see is I think they'll move the Ray timeline back a little bit. I think they'll maybe bring him in, have him suit up, but say he's still not 100%, and that's why he's being the backup. And I think they'll let Harris just keep going for a little bit longer. And if he starts to falter, then I think we see Ray, and I do think it will eventually return to Ray as the starter. But the Argonauts have a pretty good thing going right now.
Oh, definitely. I'm curious to see more so what they maybe do in the offseason. Mm-hmm. You know, does Trevor Harris say, no, I want to play? And you know, Ricky Ray is going to probably want to play for another year or two. So I'm curious to see what happens.
Well, and what's fascinating is that this exact scenario has played out before. Remember a few years ago, Zach Caleros came in as the Argonauts backup. Nobody really had heard much about him before. He performed great while Ricky Ray was hurt, and he parlayed that into a big free agent deal with Hamilton, and he's become one of the league's best quarterbacks there. By contrast, Hamilton, they were rolling pretty well with Henry Burris before that. They made the Grey Cup with him, and they made the decision to dump him and go after Caleros. So I think Toronto's going to be faced with pretty much the same decision that Hamilton was really there. And do they go with the experienced guy, with the veteran who may still have a couple of good years left, or do they really rebuild and think about the future by trying to keep Harris and maybe trading Ricky Ray away? I'm not sure which way they're going to go, and I think one thing that really puts us up in the air is seeing what happened with Caleros after they let him go. I'm not sure they're going to let another good quarterback they've developed in-house slip away.
Scott Milanovich, you know, got to start getting credit for being a guy who knows how to develop young quarterbacks.
He sure does, and I think Scott Milanovich should get a lot of credit for what he's done on offense in general. I don't think he got anywhere near enough credit when he was in Montreal as the offensive coordinator, because a lot of that was given to Mark Trestman. But Milanovich was really a key part of those teams too, and really a key part of Anthony Calvillo's late career resurgence. And in Toronto, I think he has done just a really phenomenal job with the offense. And we talked about completion percentage earlier. I think that's what really stands out about Milanovic's offense to me. It's a West Coast style. It focuses on the short pass. It focuses on the high percentage play. And it's very difficult to stop that. They've got the perfect athletes for the system, and he's been able to develop quarterbacks who make the right reads, make the correct calls, and hit the open guy. And I think Scott Milanovich deserves a lot of credit for that.
Andrew Buchholz from the 55-yard line, CFL blog, joins us. What do you make of the Edmonton Eskimos and the decision last week in BC?
Yeah, see, I think this is an interesting one, the decision to not kick and to go for it on third and four. I think there's a strong argument for what Chris Jones did, but ultimately it was the wrong call. If you look at the percentages of what teams have done historically, we ran a big study on this. Ron Petipis, who now works for the Maple Leafs, actually ran a big study on this a few years ago, and he calculated that the percentages of going for it on third and four are probably about 50% or so. So that's a big gamble to take. The kicking a field goal from that long isn't a lot safer, and the disadvantage of kicking a field goal is that there is still time on the clock in that situation, and BC only needs 1 point to win. But I still think if you add the percentages up, if you evaluate every factor involved, they made slightly the wrong call. The thing that's interesting, though, is it's not the wrong call by an order of magnitude or anything. You can make an argument for it either way. And I think that it's good that Chris Jones is aggressive and is willing to make those unconventional calls. I think he just got it a little bit wrong in this case.
Well, no doubt in my mind. I didn't agree with that one at all. The Eskimos defense, the Tiger Cats defense, which one do you think's better?
I think the Eskimos defense is better. I think the Eskimos defense is the stronger unit. The thing that's interesting, though, is I think the Tiger Cats defense, they've got some great players too. I really like their line. I think their line is equal to Edmonton's, maybe a little bit better. Where I think Edmonton really shines is with the defensive backs. I love Edmonton's defensive backs, and I think they make a lot of great plays. So I think Edmonton's a little more innovative schematically. They throw a few more weird blitzes at you, but Hamilton likes to do a lot of that too. So it's pretty close, but I think Edmonton's defense does stand out between those two teams.
What do you make of the Stampeder so far this year? You know, they've given up 148 points through the first six games.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the Stampeders have been maybe the most inconsistent team because they've shown moments of brilliance. They've had games and they've had parts of games where they looked like the team that was so dominant last year and like the reigning Grey Cup champions. But they're not hitting that level consistently. I think part of it is the depth that they've lost. When you look at losing receivers like Maurice Price, losing receivers like Nick Lewis, I think their offensive line has really suffered, both from Brett Jones heading to the NFL, from Stanley Bryant heading to Winnipeg, and then from the injuries they've suffered since then. And I think what really has stood out about Calgary over the last number of years is that despite a whole array of injuries to key guys, they've always been able to find the next man up who produces. I think now maybe we're starting to see that depth worn a little thin just because they've been doing that for so long and they've done so well, and so some of those key guys have parlayed that into opportunities elsewhere. So I think the Calgary Stampeders still have the potential to be the best team in this league, but it's a lot tougher for them now that their depth is being tested more.
Yesterday, Jim Popp came on my show and mentioned he'd like to see the CFL get rid of the negotiation list.
Mm.
What do you think?
I, I think that's a fascinating idea. I think the challenge is how do you do that in a way that's fair for all the teams. I don't think the current negotiation list system is a good one. I think it really, particularly having it be so secretive and having the information not come out piecemeal, I think that really hurts fan interest in the league. What I think there would be some merit to just getting rid of it overall. But I think the challenge with if you do that is if you just say, okay, everybody who isn't drafted is a free agent and can sign with whoever they want. I think the challenge is how do you maintain the competitive balance there? I think you would wind up with some teams just going on a run, essentially, and stockpiling all the key players, all the big-name guys. So I'm curious. I think it's a good idea to get rid of it, but I would like to see some alternative proposals rather than just maybe a free-for-all.
Well, because when you get rid of it, really, you can't hoard them. You can only sign them, right? And it's usually the American guys, right? Because they have the Canadian draft. If you're not signed as a Canadian, well, then you're a free agent anyway, so it really doesn't impact them. Mm-hmm. It's guys who, you know, like I know guys who, you know, you have some NFL quarterbacks that are on the neg list who we all know there's no chance they're ever coming here. Right. And like, and so they, but they keep them on there for 6 or 7 years. And it really, and, you know, I know some people feel that, well, if you do that, then, you know, teams with more money are going to, well, there's a salary cap in place, right? Like this would make it basically like the NHL. Yes, you have all the American free agents, but they're actually free agents. There's no neg list because the neg list is really, it's kind of a luck of the draw. You put a guy on a neg list and then you drop him and then someone else picks him up. And then, you know what? And a lot of times it doesn't go in order of, let's say Edmonton's in first. If they drop a guy in their neg list, it's not the bottom team gets to pick him up. It's whoever sees that they dropped them first and claims them.
Sure, and I think that's definitely an issue with the current neg list system. I think part of the issue too is because it's those guys who never really come up here, that certainly contributes to some criticisms of it. I think the one advantage that the current system does have, though, is that it rewards you for scouting guys and for scouting guys early. And if you spot a guy in college who you think is going to be a potential star, isn't necessarily going to make the NFL, that's a perfect fit for the CFL. I think it's worth rewarding teams for investing in that scouting and for doing that so far ahead. Is the neg list the best way to do that? I don't necessarily think so, but I do think it does have that advantage as well as the disadvantages.
Yeah, I'd definitely be something I'd be interested in, maybe shrinking it even to half the size, you know, at bare minimum. I think that would be a much, you know, that'd be a great first step to get it down to, I don't know, 15, 10, something like that, because I just think that there are some teams that just hoard guys on the negotiation list.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, for me, the big problem with it really is the way it's sort of secret, but not really secret. So some of the guys on there get leaked. A lot of the guys on there don't. It's very inconsistent. It's very hard for fans of teams to really follow who their team's actually interested in. As you mentioned, with guys that are on there for 6 or 7 years, there's not a real indication of if they're actually coming to the CFL or not. And what I find a little weird with it, too, is some teams use it in a very odd fashion for guys that they don't really have a ton of interest in. That was what really got to me with it last year with all the Tim Tebow stuff, was the Owlets had him on their list forever. And then Tim Pop goes out and talks about how he doesn't necessarily think Tebow's all that great of a fit for the CFL. So if you're not really that high on him, why are you bothering with him in the first place? So maybe that's solved by reducing the size of the list. Maybe there's some other things you can do, like put a maximum amount of years somebody can be on it. But it's certainly a problematic system, and I don't think it really works well for anyone in its current form, be they teams, players, or media.
Andrew, quick picks for the week.
I think it's going to be a very interesting week. I think that Edmonton is going to have a good game. I think they're going to do awfully well against the Alouettes there. For the rest of them, I think we're going to see a lot of close games again. I thought this past week was very good for that. The season's been good for that in general. So I'm not entirely sure who we're going to come up with. I think Toronto will beat Winnipeg given their injury issues. BC Hamilton, BC's been better lately, but, so I think that may be a bit of a close one, but Hamilton's been very good. And Ottawa always seems to play Calgary well. I think the Stampeders will win that, but it could be a close one as well.
Andrew, appreciate your time.
No worries. Thanks a lot for having me.